Welcome to TV I Say with Ashley Ray, your go-to podcast for discovering what to watch on TV and getting you closer to the TV shows you love. I'm Ashley Ray, a comedian, writer, and former TV critic, and each week my friends, fellow comedians, actors, writers will drop by to dive into the best TV shows we're all talking about right now. All right, let's get into it. TV Club, I am so excited for today's episode. This is just someone I've wanted to talk to for forever, who I look up to, Paula Pell. Welcome.
I can't believe you look up to me because I'm so freaking short.
This is true. This is true. We met. I'm towering over you, and I'm very, very short. I'm average 5'5". So.
Oh, well, I'm five, probably one now. They added 1 inch when I got my knee replacements. I was so excited.
Nice,
they
nice.
Added an inch because my knees were kind of like bowed a little bit. And they're like, you're taller now. I am.
Yeah.
I am.
You know, people pay a lot of money for that.
They know.
Do these days.
Ugh.
They do. I am so excited you're here.
I'm so excited to be here.
Because I've loved you. Where do you even begin?
Oh, God.
Saturday Night Live. I mean, you've everything I love, you have something to do with. Documentary
Now. I
cannot
believe how long it's been that I've been doing this.
Yeah. You know, there was a debate. And Debbie Downer is one of your creations
yes.
on SNL.
Rachel Dratch.
Rachel Dratch. There has been a debate recently on Twitter over whether or not Saturday Night Live and you created the term Debbie Downer.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I believe so.
That's what the historians
of Twitter
said.
I mean, are they putting on like some black and white episode of the Dick Van Dyke Show and they were saying Debbie Downer?
No, they were like, I'm pretty sure it's Saturday Night Live. And then it made, I think, a lot of us just feel old. I was like, oh, what do you mean that?
That's hilarious. I'm so paranoid when I was at SNL well, we didn't have Google. We couldn't really look up stuff because we didn't have the internet for a long time when I first got there. But I was always so scared that something, because you think parallel and you'll think of something. Like one time I just came up, I forgot what it was. It was some term. And I was like, oh my God, this is the perfect sketch, a perfect like play on whatever. And I thought it was good. And then like I looked it up and of course there were 15. Now you look up something, there's like a podcast about it. There's a song about it. There's a song on a podcast about it.
There's a TikTok account dedicated to it.
There's a TikTok account. There's a rock band named it, you know. But Rachel actually said Debbie Downer. She was the first one that said, I want to do a character that kind of always brings the room down called Debbie Downer. And I was like, great, let's do it.
Yeah. And one of my favorites.
Ugh,
I mean, that
me
was
too.
One of those characters and eras that made me go, I want to do sketch. I want to do this. I used to print the sketches out because you could find them on like GeoCity sites. And I would make my friends perform them with me.
I would have done that 100,000%. I'm so old that I used to, in the 70s, record the show on my stomach on shag carpeting in our basement in Illinois with a big Panasonic tape recorder. I'd take cassette record every single bit of the show. I would memorize the scenes and then I would do like Rosanna Dana that Gilda Radner did. I used to do it for my high school auditorium. Like we do, you know, something for an event or rally.
Oh, yeah.
And I lived and breathed. I had the album. So I memorized all those sketches. And then to be there years later in those little teeny offices, you know, in 30 Rock, there in the same rooms where those things were written I just did the show recently for Kate McKinnon. I didn't have anything in, but I got to be in Tampon Farm. I just still don't know if I've ever fully absorbed in my bones that the thing I loved so much and just breathed it and ate it, you know, that I was there for almost 20 years. I just can't believe it still.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
And when you left, I mean, what sort of were you expecting for your career? I mean,
well, I had a funny thing. I left the first time because I had a pilot NBC picked up called Thick and Thin. It was about two sisters that grew up fat and one lost a bunch of weight and how she didn't know how to function
because I had lost
100 pounds three times in my 20s. And I just was doing that cycle of trying every kind of diet. And then I'd lose 100 pounds or 90 pounds. And then I'd have a nervous breakdown the next year because I didn't know how to be thin. I didn't know how to, it would just mess me up so bad.
Yeah.
And so I did this pilot and it got picked up and I did it just because, you know, the longer you're there at a show like that, you as you do your new contract, you add in a development deal to add a little bit extra money. And, oh, I'm going to do a pilot. And then I got it picked up and I was like, holy shit, like we're going to do this. And so my first wife and I moved to Burbank. We moved out west and said goodbye. And they did an incredible sneaky thing where they wrote a sketch that was a fake sketch. And it was about these like waiters or something with these plates. I forgot what it was. And the first couple pages of it was this really dumb sketch where everyone was going, like, I kept looking and going, what is this sketch? I don't get it. And usually even dumb sketches, because I wrote dumb sketches. So I would laugh. But it was not even trying to, like, we couldn't figure, like, some of us that didn't know what was going on. Well, it turned out it was all a setup, because then the characters start going, you know, Paula is leaving and going to California. Well, then they all get up and they sang, that, we just want Paula back, y'all. We just want Paula. And they wrote all these little verses and all the girls harmonized. And I cried so hard. And it was this big, like, I get in a horse and ride off. And then the show goes down in flames within the year. So then I came back like hat in hand, like, hello.
Hey,
my name
back.
Is Paula Prell. I have a cousin that used to work here. It was like so humiliating to just kind of go back and be like, next time I leave, guys, just don't even wave.
Yeah, just
because I'll be back. Yeah. You know, showbiz is a fickle mistress.
That is how this goes.
Yeah. But it was scary it wasn't scary the first time because it was scary, but exciting that I was going to have my own TV show, you know? So I went to do that, really didn't know what I was doing. It just was a bad time to do Fat Women on television. It was not the right, I was ahead of my time for sure.
Yeah. Oh.
And so it was very rejected. And then wonderful people I worked with, but within a year or less than a year, we knew that it wasn't ever going to be seen. And so I came back. But then the second time I left was many years later. And I think I had just finally, I realized that I had to go out there and try other things. I had to go out and try movies. I had to try writing other forms because I was in my, you know, 40s, early 50s. And I just was so scared of, well, I was in my 50s, but I got so scared of being there way too long because I was starting to really feel that burnout because, man, that schedule is crazy.
It's a crazy schedule.
And it's just emotionally drains you, but it's fantastic. It's all adrenaline. It's physically grueling. And then I also just had become such a caretaker and everyone was so much younger than me that I was like Nana. I was like Grandma. And I just didn't want to just that be the end of my career, you know, where I'm just continuing to do that until I take my retirement and then just go move in with 40 dogs and and find a wife and all that. So I just decided to really, I did it first slowly. It's like breaking up with someone slowly. I said, I can't do the whole season anymore, but I could spread it out and I could do the first two of a four run or, you know, one of the two that hit in this month. And I could do about 12 a year or 10 a year, which I did for about 2 years. And that was great because I could very slowly ease out. And then that last year, I was like, I gotta go.
Yeah.
And then I started working with Judd because I was on set for Bridesmaids. So I pitched a lot of jokes on that, did well with that. And Judd was like, you want to work on other things? So I started working with him on other movies. And I realized that I was ready to be done.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, I feel like you were also in almost like every TV show.
Well, I eventually, because all those people that you work with and write for all start getting famous, then they get their own shows and then they're calling you and hitting you up for a part. It's pretty great. It's like the main reason we can all say that we had a symbiotic relationship because we helped them get famous and then they helped us get out of there. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Mindy Project, again, documentary now, which I will ask about.
Oh, my favorite. Yeah.
So many questions, but just every show. And I think I kind of got to know you outside of an SNL writer as a sort of character actor. I was like, oh my gosh, if she's in something, I know it's going to be really funny.
Oh, that's so good to hear. Well, I was always a character actor. I played the Mother Superior in eighth grade in Sound of Music and I had braces, but I looked like I was 50. And like, I mean, truly, when I look at the pictures of me when I was 13, I'm like, oh, you look like a 50-year-old woman. And I was like, climax. every mountain. And I was just a matron my whole childhood. You know, yeah. I was a goofball. I was a ham. But I was this very solid, wise owl, you know.
I feel like I also always got that part in the musicals.
Yes.
We did one called Quilters. And
I was in Quilters.
Oh, my gosh. Are you serious?
I was the mom in Quilters.
I was the mom in Quilters.
What?
I was mama in Quilters.
Are you? Can I say fuck on here?
Yes, absolutely.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yes.
Oh my God.
I was mom.
Wheel in the wheel.
Wheel in the wheel.
In the wheel. In the wheel. In the middle of the air. Oh my God.
Cornelia. For my Cornelia doll. All of it.
I cannot believe that you were in
Quilters.
Anyone
else knows that musical. It is.
It is the saddest. It's
so
a
sad.
Beautiful musical.
Yes.
Like I still to this day remember just tearing up in those songs. It's
yeah.
such a beautiful musical about these like prairie women that quilt
yeah.
and then all their dark stories
dark
and their
stories
monologues about
and,
abortion and all these things
yeah,
that you never knew about
the
eras of these
trail.
Women on the wagon trail. And it was a beautiful musical. And I did it in Florida and with my friends, my best friend down there, Mary Higgins and Mary Giravle and Dave Clevenger. And it was the most amazing experience. I loved doing Quilters.
It was. So we did it at our high school 2 years in a
oh
row
my God.
Because
that's
the director
a hard one for high
it.
School.
It really was. And the first year it was great because we had this senior girl who was like looked like a mom and everything. And then the next year they had me play Mama.
Oh my God.
And the thing is, I was the only Black kid at my school, so I was Mama, and I had all these little
all
white
these little
daughters,
white, all these little, as I call it, fish belly white.
Yeah.
It's like almost gray white.
One girl had like bright ginger red
oh
hair,
my
and I'm
God.
Just like my daughters,
my adoptive daughters.
Yeah. Like the letter scene when she's like when they're getting their piece
oh
of the and
my
it's so
God.
Sad. And every photo I look at, and I just laugh when I see it. And then we took it to the Illinois High School Theater Festival.
I love so. It. Where'd you grow up?
Rockford, Illinois.
Oh my God, I'm Joliet.
Yeah, Joliet.
Oh my God.
And it's
are we related? Have we
probably.
Done ancestry? Should we do?
We probably
it?
Should. I can't believe you know Quilters.
That is crazy that we not only know Quilters, but we were the same
the
part.
The same part.
Now,
wow.
It's one of my most fond memories of doing theater when I was younger. I was in, I was out of college. Was I out of college or was it before I went away to my last 2 years? I can't remember, but it was an era. I think it was out of college. And God, I just freaking love doing that musical.
It was, the music is good. It's
I know.
Fun music.
Every so
fun
often
songs.
I try to find it again because it's a little hard to find the
I
soundtrack.
I honestly believe I do have it. I definitely have it on my high school hard drive, and
it's
I will
so
make sure
good.
That you get it.
Oh, I have to. Yeah,
yeah.
I have to have it.
It is the original
to.
Broadway cast recording
oh,
of
I have
it.
To.
Absolutely.
I have to hear it, yeah.
I still sometimes listen to it.
I love it so much.
That is so great. Okay, let's get into the watch list. What are you watching now? Do you like to watch a lot of TV?
Well,
or?
I'm gonna be really honest with
yeah.
you. I have been, we've been writing a movie, my wife and I. We've been like really going hard for quite a long time since, obviously since the pandemic and then since the strike.
Yeah.
It's been a crazy time. And I have really gotten out of the habit of watching like a series, except I watch network, like I will rip through some SVUs. I will watch all three SVUs in a
oh,
row.
Yeah.
I will watch all three Chicagos. I watch
yeah.
the Chicago Fire,
Med
Chicago
PD Fire.
Med PD. I
yeah.
love watching those. I love watching SVU. I've watched the entire run of it.
Yeah.
And the organized crime one is so good. And oh my God. So, but I also watch my soaps. And so I've always taped them. So now I like fast forward through a lot of them.
Yeah.
I watch soaps. We watch a lot of Shark Tank.
Love Shark Tank.
And we watch,
what
I
soaps
watch
do you do?
I all the CBS.
Okay.
All CBS.
I my mom got me very into The Young and the Restless.
Yes. I'm
yes.
completely addicted to CBS. I used to watch all four. I used to watch As the World Turns, Guiding Light, Young and the Restless, and Bold,
Bold
and Beautiful.
Beautiful. Yeah.
And I wrote a sketch with Kate McKinnon when I came back to promote Sisters with Tina and Amy hosting. I wrote Kate McKinnon being my mother talking about the soaps, and her name is Deanie. So if you ever like Google Deanie SNL, it's my mom basically, but Kate McKinnon's playing it. And this is how my mom talks about the soaps. She'll call me and she'll go, oh my God, did you see him today? And I go,
yep.
I go, yeah, I did. And she goes, oh God, there's no, I didn't see him yet. Oh God, they're so good. And she'll go, big boobs and mustache had a big fight. And then big boobs went, she does not know one character.
Not
she's
one
watched
character's
it for 40
name.
Years. She does yeah, not know one know character.
Name. That big boobs and mustache, that makes me think maybe Nikki and Victor.
Yep, yep. Or, and then redhead, you know, the redhead and then the bitch and the, like, she'll just go through all the nicknames of all of them. But I watch a lot of things that comfort me. I can't watch. We were just talking earlier today about horror. And like, yeah. I can't. When I was younger, I loved alien movies. I didn't like real horror. Like, I don't like anything like violent.
I don't, yeah.
Bloody.
Like the Saw movies?
But,
no, thank you.
But I liked those alien movies yeah. and all that. And I like a murder mystery, like Mare of Easttown. I love Fleabag, but that's not a murder thing. But I'm just saying that I feel like since the pandemic and since the Trump administration, I no longer have anything in me to give for enjoyment in terms of terror.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
Anything that makes me anxious,
anything,
I don't
because I'm already riding at like 85%.
Yeah. And anything else that's going to leave me on a cliffhanger week to week? No, thank you.
I can't do it. And I can't do anything where the good person gets killed or like, I can't do it anymore.
Where I'm seeing someone just suffer week after week.
And I know that on those shows I'm mentioning, like Chicago Fire in Chicago, there are those moments
where the
sad person dies that's in the hospital or whatever, but it has more humanity to it. It's not like just a brutal thing.
Also, you can always tell when they're going to be the one to die.
Exactly. their fate is clear from the very beginning.
As soon as they're like, I'm going to get out of here and see my granddaughter.
I can't wait to finally get back with my husband that I divorced 40 years ago.
But I realize now I love him. And it's like, he's...
And then they come in with the little file and they're like, the blood, we were wrong. We were actually, we misspoke. You're going to die this afternoon. But on camera. So that's good. I love things that are, you know, but I don't watch comedy. I just don't watch comedy. I also will say, having absolutely nothing to do with the quality and amazing writing of these shows that are out right now, but there's not enough comedy.
Yeah,
like real
there's not
comedy.
Enough real joke.
It's like the
comedy.
Dramedies are the comedies, and that's why our show, I am so thrilled to have it on Netflix and to have a lot of eyes on it, because I really have been watching in disbelief that the things that are called comedies are not comedies.
That are not comedy.
No.
Let's get into that. If I even talk about what I'm watching, no one's going to care. They're going to be like, Ashley, we don't care what you're what. Paula, please. No, you guys know what I'm watching. Below Deck and some murder shows.
I love it.
There's some new cult stuff. You'll see.
Yeah. Love it.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts. TV, I
say. The Girls 5 Eva, absolutely loved it. Loved it when it was on Peacock. From the very first moment I watched, I was just like, comedy is back. Jokes, just jokes, back
heaven,
to back.
Heaven.
Jokes, you laugh.
Jokes with heart.
With heart, yeah. Heart, just silly jokes. Jokes, it's everything that you would want. If this is something that like would have blown up in networked terms, you know, like with 30 Rock or something.
Yes.
I mean, now it'd blow up as like, does it have 10 million views on TikTok?
Yeah.
But it's so funny. And
we love it.
It feels like a breath of fresh air. What do you think kind of has caused this shift? I mean, we had this era of like strong comedies. And now, where are the jokes?
I don't know. It's funny. I have this vague memory of watching Grey's Anatomy for the first time. And I got kind of hooked on it.
I remember
thinking at the time, wow, it's like ER, but not as tragic because there's some funny in it. Like there was funny in it. So it's like there's people love mixing the two where they're like really sad and really, and then there's like a funny comic relief, we used to call it, you know. But I remember a feeling that shift where that kind of like the infiltrating the waters of comedy, but they were drama shows and they were hour long drama shows.
Yeah.
And I do feel like, and I love the show, but Transparent, I think, was the first one to be truly like, we're going to change to a half hour and call it a comedy.
And be funny.
And they had some really funny and brilliant comedy people on there, but it wasn't per se like a comedy because it had so much depth and heartbreak and all these other things in it. So I definitely watched it and thought, you know, it was great and like amazing and groundbreaking. But I remember at that time when it started being in the comedy categories, it was like, holy shit, that's a comedy. Like that's in the comedy.
And that's what we're going to do.
And it's half hour. Yeah, it was just, it was a shift. And once that happened, I feel like a lot of people followed suit in that, in terms of streamers, is like creating that half hour. I mean, hey, it's easier to write a half hour of any episode of anything with a bunch of characters as a writer, I will tell you. Like if someone's telling me to write an hour long, like that's almost a movie.
That's a lot of pages.
And that's a lot of pages. And so it's cheaper, it's easier, and it's also, then there's no rule of like, oh, it's too funny, it's too serious. It's, you can have an episode that's much funnier. You can have an episode that's super tragic.
Yeah.
So I think it all just got a little bit mixed in and got a little confusing of what our categories, which, you know, in life, that has been happening with all things in terms of everything's a spectrum and everything's. But I feel like, because I am a lover of Golden Girls, I'm a lover of old school, like, major, like All in the Family, all those shows I watched growing up, those created my comedy brain with my experience between that, my life and my family being funny, like, and then watching those shows every night that were not afraid to do some hard subject, but then there'd be a big punchline that was written, beautifully written jokes. And Golden Girls is just my favorite of all. And
my
wife's favorite of all. And
same.
We still watch it and go like, that joke, there's jokes on that show that you just go, I would, like, I will spend the rest of my life sad that I did not write that joke.
Jokes that I rewatch the show, I watch an episode 5 years later and I'm like, oh my God.
And you remember, but they were real people. Like, I felt like there was an era, especially when I did that sitcom, there was an era of snark that came about in comedy that, that it was like you'd watch a show of, like, I'm making this completely up because I can't remember a show to use as an example, and I probably don't want to shit talk a show as an example.
Every show is good.
But every show is good because they worked hard to do it.
To do it.
Is that it would be, I'd be watching a show about a family, and then the 70-year-old grandma talked exactly like a 25-year-old white dude that's writing comedy.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's not how she talks. Like, that's a 70-year-old woman in Wisconsin in this home. And like, no, like, write the character.
Create
the character and have her jokes. Like, Golden Girls, all their jokes are authentic to who they are.
Yeah.
You know, Betty White's ditzy jokes, like the, you know, loose jokes of Blanche, like they are acerbic ones.
Yeah. You know, Dorothy's going to, say something sarcastic
and
rude.
And then this old hilarious little Italian, you know, that talks exactly like my grandpa Joey Stella did with Rose. And so, I mean, Sophia. So I really hated that era because I felt like nobody wrote from the experience of the human that is playing it anymore. It was like they were in love with the sound of their own voice and they just put it in. And so it never got changed to be authentically through a character. And at SNL, I wrote almost nothing but characters. So I would write something that was the weirdest ass person and they would come and look straight to camera and go, welcome to our, and it would just be this weird person based on someone I saw at a diner or, but the jokes have to be out of that person. Like if you have a funny grandpa, what kind of jokes does your grandpa say? Funny things in the room are things that would come out of
him.
I just feel like now there is a real, I am being told, which I'm thrilled because I think more people will watch Girls 5 Evan. That's why it probably got a home in Netflix, yeah. Is that people are so hungry for hard laughs.
Yeah.
They want to laugh out loud.
They want to laugh. We want to laugh.
You just want to laugh. You don't want to nod and go, oh, that's wow. Charming.
Yeah.
Or that's very sweet.
Or a little chuckle of, wow.
It's just, you know, my wife and our friend, brilliant writer, Emily Spivey, they call them softball smilers. And it's like just a softball, like, you know, slow pitch and then like a smile and a nod, you know. And I just want that, just that
yeah.
After a tearful thing, like I want it all mixed together
because
life is
yeah.
Wonderful and horrible. And I want there to be all these experiences with these characters where they hit some horrible, sad thing and then something hilarious happens and they comment on that. And then
Everett laughs.
Yeah.
One of my favorite Golden Girl moments is there's of course, an episode where Dorothy thinks about getting back with Stan.
Oh, God.
And it comes so close. And then finally, at the end, she listens to everyone. It's like, I can't do this again, Stan. And he leaves and the girls all comfort her. And she's like, oh, you know, a part of me will always, you know, a part of that man will always be with me. And it's like sad. And then they're like, oh, that makes sense. And then she goes, I mean this. And she pulls his toupee out.
That is the perfect, my wife's so favorite moment, I think, in Golden Girls is that toupee.
It's so good.
Because you have this heartfelt, and they're such good actors. So they can really tell you that, and I feel like in Girls 5 Evan, they're all such good actors,
yes.
That they can say the really heartbreaking thing and then somebody says something ungodly funny. So
it's so
the
good.
Release of, it's like every Thanksgiving you've been to, every Christmas with a funny family where someone's crying and there's something awful and somebody died and somebody, and then somebody says like, by the way, I hate the present I got, you know, like, does anybody want it? Just like the human, just human funny. I feel like I can just tell that, like, people are, when they start watching this and they respond to it to us, they'll just be like, oh, my God, I laughed out loud. And it's like, isn't that what our goal always was like laughing out loud? Like, please laugh out loud.
Please.
If it's not laughing out loud, then we're not doing our job.
Girls 5 Evan is so, so funny. The characters are amazing. Your character this season has one of my favorite arcs.
Oh, God.
As your character is finally out of the closet.
Yes. I won my ex-wife back. And then all of a sudden at the end of the season, I was like, you know what? We're going on tour. Maybe I go so my oats because I've only been with you. And she's like, well, fuck you, you know. And, yeah. And so we go on a janky tour and I keep going on social media trying to get my gays to come to these shows because we're going to Texas and all these places that the gays are hiding a little bit. And I say to them on TikTok, you know, just call me Ho Spice, but don't write it down because it spells hospice.
Yeah.
And my wife writes for the show now, and she helped create this storyline for me where I'm on, as she calls it, a tram page, that I just try to be with 178 types of gay ladies. And I have a spreadsheet,
yes,
and I just
and
check them off.
Amazing. There's the Popeye lesbian.
Oh, my God.
Just every...
Short Peg Bundy. Yeah. My favorite is Cigar Mommy.
Cigar Mommy.
And Cigar Mommy's based on Janine was walking to work one day writing Girls 5 Evan in New York, and she just saw this very elegant woman in Manhattan walking with a cigar, and she just looked Parisian or something, and she just had these long legs with this silk suit, and she was just walking, and just short little beautiful haircut and probably beautiful earrings, and she was just smoking. Smoking a cigar. And Janine was like, I don't know what that is, but I like it. She's like, I don't know what that is.
It's a Cigar Mommy.
That's a Cigar Mommy.
That's a Cigar Mommy.
Oh, my God.
I absolutely love it. I also feel like we don't see, you know, lesbians in comedies that much where they're actual characters and not just jokes. And it is this very funny storyline, but it is heartfelt. You know, at the end, the character realizes what she really wants and all that stuff. But my mom, she came out of the closet when she was 63.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I love her. What's her name?
Sharon.
Sharon.
She came out.
I am so happy to hear that because it is never too late.
Right. It's never too late.
I came out in my 50s. Well, I came out in my 40s, but I was closeted at SNL for so many years. And I really, I would say that like it wasn't until my later years with my first wife where I could just, even being gay and everyone knew I was married to a woman, where I could actually like hold her hand even.
Yeah.
Because it's our internal closeting that we do. You know, it's the fear of losing people. I would say, you know, people always would say like, oh, I'm sad. They used to say like, they still do, I'm sure, in some towns. But like to young gay people that come out, it's like, I just worry for you because I don't want you to suffer and be a depressed person. It's like, I'm only depressed because I love being who I am. Being gay is fantastic. But I'm afraid of losing people because I am.
It's how you all treat me that's making me sad. And I mean, when my mom came out at 63, my grandmother, who was still alive at the time and was probably 88, was against it and tried to like kick her out because my mom at that point was taking care of her and was her care nurse. Grandma tried to be like, I can't believe this. And we're like, get over it. Who else is going to take care of you?
Oh, my God. Also, that's a great movie, right? At some time.
Right. Yeah. And so when she came out to me, she had a girlfriend. They've been together forever, but they broke up last year.
Oh, God.
And she hasn't known how to get out there and date. She's been very afraid. And then she watched the new season of Girls 5 Eva. And she's like, this is what I need to do.
Oh, my God. I love it.
She's like, Ashley, they did it in the show. She's older. She did it. I need to go date
Sharon,
all these people.
Just go get up. Go get a massage and let your freak flag fly.
And let go out there. Meet people.
Well, I will tell you, I spent many years after my divorce. I moved out to L.A. because I had a best friend that was like a young, handsome, butch, like beautiful woman that like had all these friends that were hot lesbians. And I'm like, I'm going to go out there and get in that social circle and find my new wife and like just be happy. And just for years, I just was so depressed and so desperately depressed. And then when I found Janine, it really taught me the lesson that it is never hopeless and you are always going to have something work out that you don't think is going to work out. And so you just keep moving, you know?
Yeah.
And so I really believe that the other gift of that is the older I've gotten, especially in my 50s and now I'm 60, is that the filters fall away and you tell people the truth. So when you meet someone, you're real. You tell them the truth. And then when they tell you the truth and it mixes and matches, it's just an incredibly great feeling. Because then you don't go, oh, I'm with them, but I got to make sure I'm not this, or I don't show them this, or I don't show this, but I don't want to get too tempery. I don't want to get too, they can't see my stomach for the first 5 years. It's like all those things that women are taught to kind of mask, even in gay culture, is just like hiding who you are. And it's all done internally. It's an inside job. And so I'm so happy when anyone, I don't care what age you are, if you finally say who you are and are not afraid. And it's a complete sentence. It's not like, here I am.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Is
input?
It okay?
Everyone feedback? No. This is who I am, by the way. Bye. I'll see you tomorrow. That's it.
That's it.
And when I was young, it was always a question. It was like, I think I'm gay. I am gay. Because you were waiting to be validated and then you could move on, you know?
Yeah. And I think when I was growing up, I mean, I had the L word.
Oh my God.
And I would watch that and be like, oh, I mean, I like this, but I don't know that I don't know.
Yeah, the good thing about the L word was there was nothing like that before.
Yeah.
And it was completely representing like the Silver Lake set of all these ladies that I came to try to hang with, that I thought I was going to be part of that cool LA lesbian set, you know?
Yeah.
And it really I think pushed the needle for people doing more gay content, which I loved, but it wasn't realistic to like me sitting in the, you know, in the Hudson Valley with my, you know, with my, my coveralls on, like with 10 dogs going like, I don't look like them.
I don't look like them. Yeah. I'm not wearing the makeup.
I can't even find someone that will give me that haircut. It's cool as shit, but
if I tried, they
would just
be like, no,
it. I can't shame.
I can't be Shane. And I wanted to be Shane. I was like, okay, I've got to be Shane.
Oh my God, we all wanted to be Shane for a while, or we wanted to do Shane.
Or yeah, both. Let's be honest. Yeah. Oh, Shane was just the best.
Jeez, she was hot.
Oh my God. So this season, I absolutely love, but why do we only get 6 episodes?
Well, this was a transitional year because we left Peacock, and it kind of at the same time that we found out we weren't going to be on Peacock anymore, there was already talk of Netflix taking it. So it didn't feel as heartbreaking as it usually does when you get canceled or anything. It wasn't like announce the show is canceled, it's done, and then trying to find, which is hard to do. It was done internally because I have such great creators with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. I mean, Tina Fey, not Amy Poehler, but I love Amy Poehler and I love doing projects with her. But it was, you know, Tina Fey, Robert Carlock, Jeff Richmond, and Eric Gurian. And they have such great people in representation, in terms of Richard Weitz and Dave Miner. They just went at it. Like, we are going to make this deal with Netflix. They have a great deal of love for Tina and all things Tina.
I would think Tina wants to do something, all of Hollywood would just be like, okay.
But it was a time that was a weird time in everything getting cut and slashed and shows only doing one season. Like, there aren't long seasons anymore with shows.
Yeah.
And so it was a very scary time to just be like, is this ever going to happen? The other complicated thing, and Universal Television still produces us, and they, you know, they are amazing because they really, really sat down for 9 months and did all these negotiations with all these countries, because they not only had with Netflix had to like make the deal for US Netflix, but like they had to go to different countries that had different contracts with Netflix and really, really negotiate. So it took forever. We really thought, like, towards the end, we were like, are we just being hopeful here? Is this going to actually happen? And we were devastated at even the thought that it was not going to happen. And then we just got a call one day and we were just over the moon, because the four of us are nauseatingly in love with each other in real life. That has never wavered. And I don't think it ever will. It's like deep, true, insanely, like, deep, beautiful friendship.
I mean, the just chemistry between you all as an ensemble is what makes the comedy so strong. And
I had a mall up to where I live upstate New York for a slumber party during the break during the strike. And just sitting across from these people that we love so much. We're like sisters, you know, really, truly. So when we get to work together, it's just absolutely glorious. And Kimmy Gatewood was our director all season. So this last season and other episodes of other seasons. But to have the same director, female director, female producer, and then Meredith Scardino, who is just absolute incredible, glorious creator of the show. She can write 10 jokes in one breath and still manages to get that heart in there, which I think is so amazing and such a gift. And when we do table reads and we get those scripts, it's just like pure gold. Like, you don't have to do one thing.
When I thought it was going to go away, I was going to scream.
Oh my God.
I couldn't believe.
We were desperately sad, because it was socially with the four of us, and we don't even have time in our lives to like hang that much outside of it. So it was like this precious couple months every year where we get to just be in each other's lives every single minute, because it's long days. And so at that time, they did 6 episodes, I think, because it was transitional. They didn't know whether it was right for Netflix. You know, Netflix was testing it a little bit. So a lot of the reviews now are like, this feels like a test of whether we need more. And yes, we need
more.
All the reviews have been fantastic.
The cliffhanger that they leave.
We need more.
We need more.
It's a no-brainer.
It's the comedy. We need more. Get it nominated. Maybe a comedy with jokes can win an Emmy.
Oh my God. Ha ha. Out loud, guys. Let's laugh out loud.
Out loud.
And also, I'm going to say, bless all the wonderful, incredible shows that are out there winning all these awards, because they are all special and really incredible writing, incredible, you know, actors. I don't ever besmirch like that, but I want there to be more real estate now for these hard comedies again.
Yeah. I say, just give us a 30-minute comedy category and a 30-minute drama category.
Exactly.
Dramas can be 30 minutes now.
Exactly.
Get over it. Let's just do that. You know, but there's so many comedies that get overlooked and they respect comedy.
It's highly competitive now because there's so much content. So, you know, you can have 20 fantastically written shows that have great acting, or even more than 20. And then where do you put them? So I think we need more categories.
Yeah. More categories, more comedy, more Girls 5 Evas.
Yes.
Mostly.
Oh God, please.
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 God. the theme song gets stuck. I watched it all in a day, and then the theme song has been stuck in my head ever since.
How about the song in the finale that Sarah Bareilles wrote called The Medium Time? That is a fantastic song.
So good.
Like a beautiful song that makes me cry when I listen to it.
I was like, are they going to put an album
out? It's already out.
Is it?
Yeah, it's already, because they did it. Every year they put out like an album. So you can go on Spotify and say like season two and it'll be all the songs. Yeah, full songs. Because we'd go back and record fuller songs, fuller versions. Yeah.
I need to, okay.
Well, not virgins, fuller versions.
Maybe both.
I mean,
I can make it work.
I was a fuller virgin back in the day.
I have to go check that out because I am obsessed with the music on the show and you're singing my favorite documentary episode. Obviously, I have to ask you.
One of my favorite things of all time. And Renee Goldsberry with me, which was one of the things, because I knew her from Sisters. I put her in Sisters. And then we did a documentary now together with the incredible, incredible cast that was in that we love so much. That was one of the biggest joys of my life. And it was also one of the first things I did, because I did AP Bio, which has been incredible fun.
Love that show. Also, but, by the way, justice for AP Bio. Hate that it was canceled.
Yeah. But I love doing it because it was pure theater deliciousness. And we laughed because we got to know each other. We shot it in Portland on a very short schedule, like 3 or 4 days we were done and flying back. And when we were all together, it was such camaraderie of doing this because we really had so much to learn so quick. And then when we nailed it and we did it and we were singing harmonies and they were all such pros, comedy, you know, Broadway people. It was, we'd go and have dinner at night, and Richard Kind is one of the funniest human beings I've ever known in my entire life, and I've known a lot of funny comedy people, but we would go and have these fantastic dinners and cry laughing and just have so much fun. And then the last night we were like, wait, we're not in a cast of a show and we're not going to go on tour with company? Because it felt like a theater group that was bonding.
It felt like a cast that was bonding. You feel the energy watching it.
And it was so fast and furious. And when we did it and then we had to say goodbye to each other, we're like, well, fuck. Like this doesn't, we kind of almost lied to each other, ourselves, that we had a Broadway show we were going to workshop, you know?
Is that how Richard got the cameo this season of Girls 5 Eva?
I mean, I think he's been a friend of all of us for so long and Meredith and them, and he's probably been in, I don't know if he was ever in 30 Rock, but he's so ungodly funny. I mean, one night I was crying, laughing. I think I even probably spit out my drink, but we sat down at dinner because we'd go to the same little restaurant every night. And we sat down at dinner and he's like, it's very hot over here. Could we sit somewhere cooler? Could we sit somewhere cooler? And so we move all our apps and all our drinks and everything. We get to another place. We're sitting eating. And he goes, is it cold here? Is it feel cold? And we just are falling out. Like, he is the funniest person.
I
would love to play
him.
His wife sometime.
Please, someone
I'm
write
putting that in the universe.
Yes. Yeah. We're going to make it. That's what we do here at TVSA. It's going to happen now.
I love it.
It's going to happen.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
I just loved that Documentary Now episode because you could feel the love for theater.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, now knowing you did Quilters.
Yes. I mean, Elaine Stritch is like the gold standard. And also, I wanted to not, obviously, because I also don't look like her, like I wanted to not just 100% be trying to 100% be her. But I watched that documentary numerous times, the original documentary, and I wanted to just get certain parts of her, like the God damn it. You know, just all those Elaine Stritchisms that we all love. But yeah, yeah,
there's just such like love.
A theater broad. It's my favorite thing on earth. I will be, it will be on my tombstone, like a theater broad. And that's all I ever wanted. That's all I was ever in love with growing up was theater broads. And I probably will write something later in, even later in life where I'm a theater broad.
Please.
I love it.
I was going to say, are we getting more musical anything? Ugh. Because it's just
it's
a beautiful favorite. Mix up.
It's my favorite.
I mean, I chose my college because it's where Sondheim went.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I was just that upset.
Where did
just,
he go?
Williams College in Western Massachusetts, which has a really good theater program and stuff. Ugh. So I was just obsessed. And the documentary Now Ep just nailed it. What is your favorite Sondheim?
Well, Sweeney Todd is really, I think, my favorite, but also Company, because I stage managed Company. My mom turned 40. She had done theater in high school, and my friend was directing Company, and he wanted her to do the Elaine Stritch part and the Ladies Who Lunch. And she was scared, but she hit 40 and she had never had her driver's license. And she was like, I'm going to get my driver's license and I'm going to do theater. I'm going to do a play. And so I stage managed it and she did, you know, here's to the lady. And she's got a great voice. And so it was amazing. And she was perfect in it, just perfect. And so that I have a heart for. And like all those, I know this isn't Sondheim, but Applause, like those musicals that I when I was really young, stage managed, or I was in, you know, like all the Rodgers and Hammerstein, you know, like Hammerstein, like Oklahoma and just all those. I just know the words to every single song from listening to those soundtracks for years and years. And then, of course, I fell madly in love with Hamilton. And then I went to Hamilton about 5 times. And, you know, that is just my favorite thing.
Yeah. My obsession musical was A Chorus Line.
Oh, God. I
drove
love
my
the
mom
chorus
insane
line.
With A Chorus Line.
I still
line.
Sing at the ballet when I get drunk. I
same.
Mean, no. My favorite. Yeah. Yeah. No, Chorus Line was extraordinary because it was so 70s. It was so of that era. So when I was growing up and then it was just all about these theater people trying to get a job, it was brilliant because it was so, I hate the word meta, but it was, I guess, meta because it was people, you know.
And when they first did it, like in the small theater, they would use actual actors and cut them every night.
Yeah,
it was an actual audition.
Oh, God.
I was obsessed with it.
I love every song in that.
Every single song. It's why I know who Robert Goulet is.
God,
just
I love it. Also, I was obsessed with the movie Fame. So like all the music in Fame, even though that wasn't a Broadway. Did that ever become a Broadway musical? Maybe
like
for a short time. It was a TV show.
Yeah.
But the original Fame is just, there's nothing like that music to send me to a place of remembering with my big ass headphones in my room with that curly cord and, oh my God, what musicals and just music in general is just like, it was just fed my soul my whole childhood.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're coming up at the end here. This has been so much fun.
So much fun.
Oh my gosh. I just want to check. I had people sending questions because obviously.
Great.
Come on.
Hi, everyone listening.
Yeah, you're you. Come on. So.
Come on.
Come on. Do you watch a lot of like cult documentaries or murder stuff?
I don't like real murder because I get too sad about that people might be watching it that actually experienced it through their family. So I always have a sadness about that, but I like fake murder stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I like the real
Although
stuff.
I know fake murder stuff is based on real stuff.
I do kind of prefer that, like the made for TV version of it.
Yes.
I'm like, give me that. You know?
I don't like seeing the actual parents crying about losing their kid or something. It's just wrecks
kids
me.
Crying. Yeah. I don't need that.
No.
Give me the sanitized version where a pretty actor plays them and it's
or watching
wonderful.
Murder, She Wrote, where like the guy in the casino got shot and it's one red dot on his white tuxedo. that's where the bullet entered, and there's one red drop, and they're like, "He's dead."
Okay, I'm gonna go with this one because I really like it. You have been in a number of TV shows that are amazing. A lot of them that didn't go or didn't get the time that they were that I think they should have gotten, like AP Bio. A few of them. But that almost happened with Girls 5 Eva. Luckily, it was saved. If there's another show that you've been on that you feel should be brought back, which one is it?
Oh, I mean, initially, for sure, I would say Mapleworth Murders, because John Lutz and I did this show for Quibi that ended up on Roku. You can still watch it on Roku in these short episodes. But it was one of the most fun things I've ever done, since I was born. And we wrote a fake Murder, She Wrote type show. But I'm an older lesbian that solves crimes in a town where everyone keeps getting murdered. Yeah. And so there's a lot of cemeteries. And he's like an idiot Barney Fife, like a dopey sheriff and police officer. And he's always trying to come on to me. And I'm like, Gilbert, I don't enjoy the grapes. I don't enjoy the grapes and stem. And I'm always telling him like to get away. And he's always like, I'll wait it out. I'll wait it out, Jessica. Not Jessica, but Abigail.
I did watch this on Quibi. When they announced Quibi, this was one of the shows I remember being like, oh, I'm so excited about this. Yeah. I don't think I finished it before Quibi was no longer a thing.
Oh, my God.
I didn't know it was
on
Roku.
Well, it's on Roku, yeah.
Oh, my
God. And there's so many funny guest stars of like pretty, you know, very big stars in it. And we just had so much fun, but also it was so stupid, like in the best ways. I'm like topless in it. I almost get run over by a car and I'm topless. And it's just so much fun and big, big laughs. But I would love to do something. It's just hard because, you know, Murders in the Building, which is one of my that's what I watch. I watch that.
I love that show.
Love
it's so
that
good.
Show. That is just fantastic. There's those comedy kind of murder shows out there now. And this was before that. So it feels like now that always happens when you do something and you go, God, I wish I could find, why can't we get this on a network? Like we're trying. And then you're like, oh, but this, they kind of take up. But I have been told by people before, you know, there's so much content now. People just watch what they like.
Yeah, what they like.
They might watch this murder show as opposed to that murder show, you know?
Yeah.
So we shouldn't ever compare and despair that, like, because our thing is a category of something else, it can't exist. But
yeah,
that would be the one. That's the answer.
That's a great answer. Yeah. I'm going to go watch that all on Roku and someone bring it back.
Yeah.
Someone out there listening.
Oh, we'd love it.
Thank you so much
for
joining me. This has been absolutely amazing.
I had so much fun.
I truly thank you for this conversation. The Quilters thing alone.
Oh my God, the Quilters is ungodly.
I'm
going
to go text
fantastic.
My best friend who was the stage manager on the show.
No, and now, of course, I want to listen to the soundtrack.
Same. I'm like, I'm thinking of all the songs.
Oh, those letters at the end. I just remembered those letters and we would cry,
and we cry
so hard in the production because we all loved each other.
Yeah.
And, oh my God.
And the way we staged it, like I would stand there with a candle and each one of my daughters would come and like light her candle. And then like when I died, they would pull this big quilt that like revealed an emerald green quilt because you know
God.
I'm also gonna text my high school theater teacher about this.
Oh my God, I am definitely immediately gonna go home and play some of those songs.
Yes, and I will send you that soundtrack. Thank you so much for joining me, Ashley.
We had such a great time. Me and my two boobs, we really enjoyed ourselves.
We had the best time, listeners. I feel like you got enough to listen to. Go watch Girls 5 Eva on Netflix, and you know, also go watch The Secrets of Polygamy, which is on A&E. It's a really good cult doc that just finished this week. And I want to talk about it in the future. So that's your homework. I will be back next week with another episode.
Maybe I say with Ashley Ray, another episode. Another episode of
TV I Say with Ashley Ray is an Earwolf production made by me, Ashley Ray Harris. It's engineered by Abby Aguilar and produced by Matt Apodaca. Our theme song is by Rafia. It means so much to me if you go rate, review, subscribe, follow TV I Say, and let us know what you think. And tell your friends, family, anybody. We got a lot of TV recs for a lot of people. For special TV Club members, join my Patreon.